Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. In a minute, we'll talk to psychologist Jeremy Dean about changing behavior to keep your New Year's resolutions. But I was wondering if New Year's resolutions might have ever made a difference in history. So I looked up what happened on January 3rd in human history. You know, give them a few days to get past the hangover and write up their orders. January 3rd. And according to the list I found on Wikipedia, it looks like a lot of movers and shakers make New Year's resolutions to get tough and crack the whip. So, for example, 1431, Joan of Arc is handed over to Bishop Pierre Cauchon. Boom. 1521, Pope Leo X excommunicates Martin Luther. Boom. 1777, George Washington defeats the British at the Battle of Princeton. Boom. 1925, Mussolini announces he is taking dictatorial powers over Italy. Boom. 1932, martial law is declared in Honduras to stop the famous revolt by banana workers fired by the United Fruit Company. Boom. And in 1962, Pope John the 23rd excommunicates Fidel Castro. Boom. So just a curiosity, but January 3rd in human history, my advice, if you have enemies, folks, don't start the new year in too much of a drunken haze. Now, how many of you have already broken your New Year's resolution? Maybe you've already skipped a day at the gym or found yourself biting your nails at your desk on your first day back to work. Well, fear not. Our next guest says any habit change is possible, and he's going to tell us how. Joining us is Jeremy Dean. He's a psychologist and creator of the popular Psy blog, PSY blog, as well as the author of Making Habits, Breaking Habits, Why We Do Things, Why We Don't, and How to Make Any Change Stick. Jeremy Dean, welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, good to be with you, Brian.
How'd you like those movers and shakers cracking the whip after New Year's?
A fantastic list, really good.
And by the next day, January 4th, there is no such concentration. So I don't know. So maybe there's something to it. But listeners, we want to hear from you. What are your New Year's resolutions? Have you had success with a New Year's resolution in the past? If so, how'd you do it? If you've made a resolution, what's your strategy for keeping to it this year? We'll see if it conforms to Jeremy Dean's advice. Or if you've already broken one, what happened? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And by the way, you can keep the Django Unchained and Lincoln conversation going there, too, on our page for that at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. So, Jeremy Dean, I guess we should start out with a little disclosure. You yourself are not actually a fan of New Year's resolutions, right?
No, I'm not. I mean, they've got built into them this idea that you're going to totally transform yourself, like you're going to wake up and you're going to be a totally different person January 1st, 2nd, or maybe even the 3rd, as you were talking about there. And I think for most people, that's going to be very unrealistic. So one of the things I talk about in the book is it's really important to make quite small changes, and that seems to work much better.
But can't they be a positive form of motivation for people to attempt to make a change in their lives for the better? Sure, it's arbitrary, so it's January 1st. What does that really mean? But to break bad habits and make good habits stick, isn't there some inherent worth in drawing a line for yourself?
Absolutely, and I think New Year's resolutions can be, they're a good reminder, I think, and the reminder doesn't come frequently enough as far as I'm concerned. I think, you know, we should be setting our new month's resolutions in February, March, April, and May, because the kind of changes I think that people should make are the kinds of quite small ones, which maybe don't take that long, and then you can go ahead and make another one and layer that on top of the last one.
So where do you start? Your book title is Making Habits, Breaking Habits. How do you make a habit that you don't already have?
I suppose the very first thing to start with is that with New Year's resolutions, for example, people tend to make quite vague resolutions like I'm going to be a better person or, you know, I'm going to be fitter and healthier in the new year. Now, they're fine as sort of overall goals, but it's much better to make a really specific kind of plan that links a situation with an action. And that's what a habit is, really. It's a link between a particular situation and an action.
So that's pretty interesting. So, like, instead of I'm going to eat less fat or I'm going to eat healthier, I'm going to eat 20% less red meat, right? I'm going to cut down on one of those red meat meals per week, just pulling an arbitrary example out of the air, or two fewer per week, and something like that that's really specific?
Well, I would pick up on two of those things. You said, fewer and less are two of the words you use, and I would say, well, let's try to avoid those kind of maybe negative words and let's replace them with positive things. Mm-hmm. So you might say to yourself, if I feel hungry between meals, then I will eat an apple. So that's a kind of positive statement about healthy eating. If it was kind of a main course or something, then you would make a positive statement that links that situation, lunchtime, with the action that you're going to take, which is the sort of with a lighter meal.
All right. You want to talk to a resolver? Here is John in Paramus. Hi, John. You're on the air. How are you doing?
Happy New Year. My resolution is to try and control my temper, especially at home, which is not that easy for me to do since I've been doing it the wrong way. So a long time not, but I'm trying to control my temper.
So help him out, Dr. Dean. Where does he start?
Sorry, I didn't catch that one.
Oh, he said he's trying to control his temper as a New Year's resolution and finding it hard so far, especially at home, after many years of ingrained behavior patterns.
Okay, well, this is very difficult because anger is an emotional issue. And the thing with habits is that we tend to perform them unconsciously. If you're in the habit of getting angry, then when something sets you off, suddenly you find you're angry and you don't always know the reason why. So quite often with habits, it's about tracing them back to their cause. What's the trigger? What's the thing that starts you off? Now, one thing you can do is kind of try to see during the day what kinds of things are making you angry, and then is it possible to either avoid those situations, or if that's not possible, to develop an alternate response to them, the classic example being counting to 10 or something like that.
Find any of that potentially useful, John?
That's what I've been trying to do. I've been trying to avoid situations, and then if I get in a situation where I think I'm going to lose my temper, I try and almost count to 10 or try and walk away so I don't and I feel a lot better. But I'm really working on it.
All right. Good luck. I hope you get over the hump on that one, and for your sake and the people you're around, too. Let's see. Kathleen in Queens. You're on WNYC. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. I just wanted to mention, I have only heard this one time, but it makes so much sense, is that when the subconscious mind evidently does not hear the word not or no. It doesn't deal with that. So if you say, I will not smoke, it picks up, I will smoke. So it's always better to phrase everything, as he said, in a positive way. I don't know if I'm making any sense with that, but I think that's exactly true. If I say I will not watch TV today, what am I doing? The next thing I'm doing is watching TV because it picked up, okay.
Jeremy Dean?
Yeah. No, that's a really great point. And there's quite a bit of research in psychology to show that this is absolutely true. When you try to suppress a thought, it comes back to bite you and comes back stronger. I mean, the original studies were done, they sat people down and they said, don't think about a white bear. And the very first thing that comes to mind is a white bear, and it comes back stronger and stronger. And the same thing's true with sort of eating as well. Quite often when people are trying to diet, it causes them to binge eat because they're trying to suppress the urge to eat. And so the mind kind of comes back stronger. It's extremely irritating.
So how would you do it with respect to smoking, the first example that she gave? Because if you're a smoker and you want to stop smoking, what you want to do is stop smoking.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, smoking is one of the most difficult habits to change. And what smokers quite often do is try to replace their smoking with something else. So chewing gum is a classic example because it's quite difficult to chew gum and smoke a cigarette at the same time, although perhaps some people can manage it. But that's one way to go. So you're kind of trying to develop an alternative habit, a replacement habit that's incompatible with the smoking.
Kathleen, great point. Thank you for calling up. 212-433-WNYC as we continue with Jeremy Dean, author of Making Habits, Breaking Habits, Why We Do Things, Why We Don't, and how to make any change stick. We've been collecting some questions and comments about this on our Facebook page, too. And Ari wrote an interesting comment which says, getting my son to bed earlier, more planned use of my time, more exercise. These are some of the resolutions. But then Ari adds, it takes a few weeks to recover from the holidays. I think all resolutions should take effect on January 15th. It is especially difficult to go from gluttony to virtue, sloth to calculated activity. We set ourselves up to fail.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And you don't want to bite off more than you can chew, especially at this time of year. So I think it's very good advice to go slow and take it easy.
Here is Denise in Westchester. Denise, you're a resolver this year?
Yes, I am.
Two.
My resolution is to be a raw foodist and a raw food vegan, which I've done before and I've been successful with, when I haven't been successful being a cooked food vegan, because I feel that that's very limiting. You can't have dairy in your diet, and you can't have dairy as a raw foodist, but you see all this color of the bright fruits and vegetables that you can eat, and I feel more successful when I can do that.
Huh. So does that mean only a raw food vegan, no cooked food in your diet?
Yes, basically. And I usually do it like a month-long cleanse, like January 1st. Well, I'd start at January 2nd till the end of the month.
Wouldn't it be easier to stick to if you had a mix of foods, or not really for you?
I feel like it's easier for me to draw a line and say just all raw foods, but I do allow myself one cheat a day so that mm-hmm. there's like uh-huh. a chocolate at work that everybody's eating. Ooh. I can have a little bit of that, and that will keep me going.
I won't tell. Denise, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Interesting call. Happy New Year. Good luck with it. You know, when you talk about good habits and bad habits, Dr. Dean, it seems like the bad habits are always the ones that form the easiest. It's always the good habits, the healthy habits, that seem difficult to take on. Is that an illusion or is that real?
It is a bit of an illusion, yeah, because I think the absolute vast majority of our habits are good ones. Things like looking both ways before we cross the road and putting on our seatbelts and things like that. So all these habits are going on in the background, and we don't notice them because they're good habits. They're keeping us alive, and they're keeping us clean and tidy and on time, and all those kinds of things. But the bad habits, we tend to notice the result of the bad habits. So we tend to see the weight gain, for example, or you know, we feel a bit fed up if we haven't had enough exercise or been working too hard. So, we tend to notice the sort of results of the bad habits much more, and I think that's the reason that it kind of comes to the top of your mind.
And some of the bad habits, I think scientists would say, we have evolved into, like our taste for fat, which was at one time, a survival mechanism.
And we absolutely respond automatically to our environments, and our environments, as they are at the moment, are filled with adverts for food, and you know the supermarkets are filled with delicious-looking kind of items that are filled with things that aren't very good for us, and our homes are filled with them as a consequence. So perhaps one of the first steps for people eating healthily is to look around the kitchen and see what's there, because we respond kind of automatically to the things that we see right in front of us. So even just simply, you know, clearing that stuff out of the kitchen and putting a bowl of fruit on the counter can be helpful.
And it's also the environment of the people in which, you know, we keep their whose company we keep. Maybe someone's trying to pare back their alcohol intake, but their friends like to go out to the bar, or they want to get in shape, but, you know, everybody's logging 10-hour days in the office in their circle. So people matter, too. That's another aspect of the environment.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Other people are a major part of how our habits form. And another great example is families as well, aren't they? Because you're ingrained into lots of habits from childhood. I know certainly myself, I'm into cycling, and that's a habit that I started years and years ago as a child, and that's kind of stuck with me. So that's a sort of example of a good habit that stuck with me from childhood.
Psychologist and cycler Jeremy Dean, author of Making Habits, Breaking Habits, Why We Do Things, Why We Don't, and How to Make Any Change Stick. We just have a couple of minutes left. I'm curious, just to change direction for a minute, you also write the very popular Psy blog, that's Psy as in psychology, PSY blog. One of the things that I see that you do there is that you aggregate some of the most interesting psychological studies that come out. So I'm just curious if you have like a top three psychology stories of 2012.
Yeah, well, I suppose one of them is this idea about suppression, which we were talking about earlier, which is coming out stronger and stronger now in the research. So, you know, the idea that you shouldn't suppress thoughts, otherwise they come back stronger. And another thing was the power of smiling, actually. I did a series of studies about smiling, and it's incredible what a simple act like smiling can do, all kinds of things, persuading people and stuff like that. So there's a couple of things for you.
What are people researching a lot these days in psychology? Are there hot topics?
There are hot topics. My main interest is social psychology, and at the moment there's quite a lot of interest in the way that kind of the way that we move our bodies is related to our mental state. So, for example, there's this thing called power posing. So the idea is that you put yourself in a powerful pose, and this feeds back to your mental state. And it's a really cool reminder that, you know, we're not just brains in a jar, but absolutely our minds are connected to our bodies, and the feedback between the two goes both ways. So that's a bit of a hot topic at the moment.
So maybe John from Paramus, who's trying to control his temper as a New Year's resolution, should physically put himself in what, a sublimated position to the other people in his household?
Yeah, sitting down can't hurt, I don't think.
Very interesting. All right, and what do you... Did you make any of your own New Year's resolutions this year?
You know what? I haven't done yet, no.
And it's just sort of not your thing?
It's not my thing, but I think I'll be looking to make some little tweaks, certainly, as I get going in the year, definitely.
All right. Well, as our Facebook commenter said, maybe January 15th. Maybe it's Chinese New Year's resolutions that are going to be... More effective down in February there. Jeremy Dean, psychologist, creator of the popular Psy blog, and author of Making Habits, Breaking Habits, Why We Do Things, Why We Don't, and How to Make Any Change Stick. Thank you so much, and Happy New Year.
Thank you very much for having me.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC.